This is KBOO Portland 90.7. It's News and Public Affairs Day with special programming all day from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. We are in the middle of a mini-special on issues related to peak oil. And next we'll hear a talk by Richard Heinberg, author of Power Down, Options for a Post-Carbon World. This piece was recorded at First Unitarian Church in Portland on January 20th of this year by Mel Resler. The event was sponsored by Living Earth. Here's Richard Heinberg.
Our subject tonight is, of course, peak oil. And it's a serious subject. I am not a petroleum geologist myself. How I got into this is I teach human ecology at a small private college in Northern California. And I've been studying cultural change and the process by which the modern world came to be what it is for many years. And tried to explain it to myself in all kinds of different ways. Obviously something really dramatic happened with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. But what exactly was that? Was it capitalism? Was it invention? Was it Newtonian science? Was it... I actually wrote a whole book on this subject called A New Covenant with Nature. And interestingly, I go back to that book now and I see that the words energy, oil, and coal do not appear anywhere in that book. I missed it completely. Because energy is really the core of the whole thing. If you understand how energy works and how human beings have been harvesting energy from the environment, you can understand a lot about cultural evolution. I mean, the change from hunting and gathering to the beginnings of horticulture and agriculture, and then the Industrial Revolution, all of these were fundamental social changes that had to do with transformations in our ability to harvest more energy from the environment. And with more energy capture came the opportunity for building larger and more elaborate social structures. Now, all of this went along in a fairly linear way for many thousands of years as we gradually domesticated draft animals and domesticated food crops and created sailing ships and all of these things that were ways of eking out just a little bit more energy here and there. But then when we got to the Industrial Revolution, all hell broke loose. Metaphorically and in some ways literally, because we discovered fossil fuels. Instead of just relying on energy that we were harvesting from the environment in terms of real-time solar input into the biosphere, we found fuels that had been created over millions of years and concentrated slowly in the ground in undersea sediments and underground sediments. And those fuels that had been created over millions of years, we could dig up and extract over the course of mere decades and burn those to power our society. So the Industrial Revolution wasn't just about inventions, because those inventions would never have happened if we hadn't had a new energy source to run them with. It was in some ways like winning the energy lottery. And we've been living in the biggest party and enjoying the biggest party in the history of our species, and really in the history of our planet. No species has ever been able to harvest anything like the levels of energy that we enjoy. One way of appreciating this is looking at, for example, the contribution of different forms of energy to the U.S. economy. Back in 1850, 65% of the work being done in the U.S. economy was being done by muscle power of domesticated animals, horses, oxen, mules, and so on. Another 17 or 18% came from human muscle power. And here in the U.S. in 1850, we're talking about quite a lot of muscle power from kidnapped Africans and indentured Chinese. Yes, slavery was all about capturing energy from the environment, in other words, from other human beings. Only about 18% of the work being done in the U.S. economy in 1850 was being done by fuel-fed machines. Now, fast forward to 1960, and it's all being done by fuel-fed machines. That doesn't, obviously, people are still working, people have jobs, but the contribution of muscle power is inconsequential in comparison to what we're getting from primarily fossil fuels. Of course, by this point, we have some hydropower and so on, but the contribution of renewable sources of energy in the U.S. economy has stayed pretty well constant from 1850 to the present in terms of absolute amounts. We're not getting much more renewable energy from the environment in North America today than we were 150 years ago. Almost all of that growth in energy usage has been in the form of fossil fuels. And that's had some consequences. Globally, we have been able to increase the carrying capacity of planet Earth for human beings using fossil fuels. We've done that by increasing food production. The human population would not have grown in the last 200 years as fast as it has if we weren't able to feed all of these people. I mean, look at this. There were never more than a few hundred million of us at any one time on this planet going back for thousands of years. And then just in 1820, we finally arrived at 1 billion. By 1930, just 110 years later, we were up to 2 billion. Our population had doubled in just 110 years. But then what happens? By 1960, we're up to 3 billion. By 1975, we're up to 4 billion. By 1986 or so, 5 billion. And by 1999, we're up to 6 billion. Now, it's 2006 now. We've added a half billion people just since 1999. We're up to 6.5 billion now. And that half billion represents basically the population of North America. So we've added a North America's worth of people to the world just since 1999. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Well, again, we've done that partly by increasing food production and also by increasing the scope and speed of transportation. Because we can transport food and raw materials and finished goods in ever larger numbers, ever further distances to support more human beings. It's quite a feat. The only problem is, when I look at this as an ecologist, I'm reminded so much of other similar graphs, like this one, for example. The growth of yeast in a 10% sugar solution. I'm from Northern California, and we're very familiar with this there. That 10% sugar solution is, well, grape juice. And when we add the yeast to the grape juice, of course, their numbers proliferate. They experience a population bloom. And they consume the sugar in their environment. They consume their fuel. And they also, at the same time, give off an effluent, which is alcohol, which, of course, is the whole point of the exercise as far as we're concerned. But that's a poison to the yeast. And so as they're consuming their resources, they're also poisoning themselves with their own effluent. And as a result of that, at a certain point, this population bloom turns to a crash and die-off, and virtually all of the yeast die. Now, to me, this raises a very important and troubling question. And of course, this is funny, but at a certain level, I don't mean to be so facetious with this, because this is really the challenge of the next century. We think of ourselves as being so smart. After all, we've invented all these inventions. You know, I mean, look at this, a computer, a projector, electric lights running on electricity from God knows where, and all of it. It's amazing. That's certainly a gauge of intelligence, but I would say another gauge of intelligence is our ability as a species to understand and foresee the consequences of our behavior and change our behavior accordingly. Makes sense, right? Well, that's the test. We'll see how well we do. The most important of the fossil fuels, because it's been so convenient to use and so energy dense, is oil. And we started using oil about 150 years ago. primarily because of resource depletion. At that time, we were relying on whale oil to illuminate our houses. And whale oil was getting a lot more expensive because we were getting so good at killing whales. So a fellow by the name of Edwin Drake had this brilliant idea of substituting rock oil, which is the literal translation of the word petroleum, rock oil for whale oil. And also he had the idea of drilling wells for the stuff, just as people were already drilling water wells. And this was so successful that the problem then became finding new uses for the stuff, because it immediately overwhelmed the existing demand for illuminating oils and lubricating oils. So a very clever young man who happened to come on the scene early on, a fellow by the name of John D. Rockefeller, not only cornered the market on the stuff, but also started hiring teams of engineers and inventors to find new applications for this rock oil. And before you knew it, we were using it to heat homes, to power steamships. Then there was the invention of the internal combustion engine and the chemicals industry, the plastics industry, the airline industry. And before you know it, here we are today. This is a picture of the world's largest producing oil field, Ghawar in Saudi Arabia, which produces 5.5 million barrels of oil per day. So we've come a long way in 150 years.
We're listening to Richard Heinberg, author of Power Down, Options for a Post-Carbon World, speaking on peak oil. He spoke at an event sponsored by Living Earth on January 20th. We'll go back to this talk after a short break. Pear and Bill are here this morning to share with you why it's important to support KABU and this type of programming.
But first, a message from our legal scholar here, Mr. Bill.
Yes, okay. I am not a lawyer, and I don't play one on radio. But a caller called and said that it was incorrect for us to tell people they were owners, because we are a non-profit foundation. Now, I would like to call on our volunteer coordinator, Miss Annie Haynes, who will clarify that issue for us all. Miss Haynes.
Hello. I feel strange talking without headphones on. Okay, but I can do that. I know what I say. So, to explain briefly what is meant by you can become an owner of KABU, KABU is a non-commercial listener-supported radio station licensed to the community. It is owned and operated by the KABU Foundation, a non-profit foundation incorporated in 1972 or 3. I could check my notes. I think it's 73. And before that, we were operating actually under the Jack Straw Media Foundation out of Seattle for the first 5 years of our existence. But since 73, we have been the KABU Foundation. Now, the KABU Foundation in and of itself is supported entirely by our listeners. Well, 85% by our listeners. About 15% of our budgetary makeup comes from underwriting. But 85%, the vast majority, comes directly from you, our listeners. And when you contribute to the organization and you become a member of the organization, in fact, really, in essence, and beyond essence, beyond theory, in reality, you become a member owner of KABU. You and 6,299 of your friends currently own the station. We'd like to increase that. We'd like to spread that out in the community and have you also become a listener who supports the station and who knows that it's important to become a member of the foundation that owns KABU, because we control KABU's future together. And that's what is meant when we say, come on, you can own the media right now. You can be a piece of KABU.
Well, you know, it's like, when you own a piece of land, what does that mean? It means you have sort of stewardship over it. You have the use of what it produces. and you sort of have control over that piece of land. You know, eventually, you know, that ownership might pass to somebody else. So owning KBOO or whatever you want to call it gives you certain kind of rights. You can come down here and feel kind of invested in this place. You have the right to vote in elections. You can vote for the board. You have the right to run for the board. You can be a candidate. You can work on committees that deal with the some of the issues, like the program committee or the personnel committee. So we value your input. So you can help run this station. So there are lots of rights that go along with your membership and your in the foundation. So,
and whether you call it ownership or membership or sillyship, the first place to deal with it all is 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Those are the phone numbers that will get you to our lovely volunteer phone answerers who will help you become or renew membership, like that person calling right now.
That's right. They can come on down and then schmooze with us. You will see that Bill and I are not just another pretty face, you know.
God knows.
We have intellect and...
we don't have pretty faces.
Anyway, we are here. We'll be happy to meet you. We'll show you. You can't miss our 40-story corporate headquarters here on Southeast 8th. You know, it's a little blue building. It says KBOO on it. That's how you know it's not just another blue building. And but come on down and see us. That's another right. As a member or even a visitor, you have a right to a bagel and a cup of coffee. So come on down.
And actually, if you make a contribution, I don't think we're through with our cups yet. We have coffee mugs, ceramic coffee mugs, and if you become a member, minimum of $20 for the poverty stricken, then you can walk out of our headquarters with your very own KBOO coffee mug.
And for a little extra, we put some schmear on your bagel.
Yeah.
So come on down. I mean, 503-232-8818 or outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266.
And back to the talk.
Problem, of course, is that we're talking about a resource that is non-renewable and therefore, by definition, depleting. And we always knew, therefore, that sooner or later we would experience problems with supply. But it was never clear when that would happen. But the first real warning sign we got was when U.S. oil production peaked. And this is a picture of what happened. Discovery of new oil in the lower 48 U.S. Started way back in 1859, gradually increased. There were some substantial finds here and there until we get to 1930 in Texas with the peak of discovery in the United States. And since then, discovery has declined and declined, and it's not for lack of looking. The U.S. is the most explored area in the world by far. More wildcat wells have been drilled in the lower 48 United States than in the rest of the world put together. So we've looked everywhere you can look for oil in North America, and this is what we found. Now, so peak of discovery occurred in 1930, and extraction of oil continued to increase its pace until 1970, when that peaked and started to decline. Now, one very important geophysicist foresaw that this would happen. His name was M. King Hubbert. And back in 1956, he predicted that U.S. oil production would peak right around 1970. At the time, even though he was a very eminent scientist with many important publications to his name, not many people listened to him very seriously. But, of course, he was proven correct. And that U.S. oil production peak, I believe, deserves to be considered one of the most important economic events of the 20th century. We don't read about it in our history books. We don't hear it discussed on the radio and see it discussed in newspapers and so on. It's a statistic. It happened, but it doesn't seem to have much consequence for us. Or does it? Think about it. The U.S. used to be the world's foremost oil-producing nation, by far. In fact, we were the world's foremost oil exporting nation for many decades in the early 20th century. We were the Saudi Arabia of the early 20th century. Anybody here ever see a TV show called The Beverly Hillbillies? Yeah, that was made in the 1960s. That show made sense back then. Today, if you had a similar show on television, they'd have to be hillbillies who lived in Kazakhstan because, you know, nobody's finding oil in the U.S. So we were the world's foremost oil producer and oil exporter. We were also the world's foremost exporter of manufactured goods and machine tools. In 1950, 60% of the world's trade goods carried a Made in USA label, and that was a symbol of quality. And we were loaning money to the rest of the world. If anything, that is a picture of industrial health, wouldn't you say? Now, where are we? We've become by far the world's foremost oil importer. We import over 60% of what we use. The world's second and third foremost oil importing nations are China and Japan. And we import twice as much as China and Japan combined. We have also become the world's foremost debtor nation. We're borrowing something like $2.5 billion per day just to finance our trade deficit, never mind government debt or consumer debt. And 40% of that trade deficit goes directly to pay for oil. Much of the rest of it goes indirectly for that purpose. We've also become by far the world's foremost importer of manufactured goods. Now, if the former slide is a picture of industrial health, what is this? What would you call that? Now, I wouldn't say that all of this transformation has to do with the depletion of our resource base, but certainly some of it must, don't you think? And yet, we pretend it didn't even happen. We look at the situation we're in right now and we assume that it's somehow normal. This is what a country does. After you've used up your oil, you use other people's oil. So just as U.S. oil production peaked, the same thing is going to happen sooner or later to the world as a whole. There is no dispute about that, really, among serious analysts. So what's it going to look like? Answer, nobody knows. This is one organization's projection. This is from the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, which is mostly an academic organization, also contains a lot of ex-industry petroleum geologists headquartered in Europe primarily, although there is a U.S. branch. So anyway, ASPO is projecting global oil production peak for around 2010. I'll go into a little more detail here as to why they're saying that. But first of all, let's look at the history. Notice that up until the 1970s, our dependence on oil was growing rapidly. We were just going to town on this stuff. And then the oil embargo of 1973, the Arab oil embargo, which caused prices to shoot up by 400%, that stopped us in our tracks for a while. And then in 1979, with the fall of the Shah of Iran, when prices went up another 200%, we experienced a real substantial economic downturn for a few years, and we actually started using less oil. Remember those days? Jimmy Carter was on television making these speeches, wearing a cardigan sweater and telling the American people that if we wanted to maintain our democratic institutions, we'd have to become energy self-sufficient once again, and we might have to actually sacrifice and work hard. Didn't go over very well. Anyway, we did manage to lower the speed limits on highways from 75 to 55 miles an hour. People started buying smaller cars. We instituted the mandatory fuel efficiency standards for cars. People started insulating their homes better. It worked. We actually used less oil year on year for several years until the mid-1980s when prices for oil plummeted. And, of course, that encouraged us just to go back to the party. And since then, of course, we've become even more dependent on this stuff. This slide also shows the difference between conventional oil, which is this stuff down here, stuff that we find onshore or on the continental shelf, and that's, you know, liquid, black, red, brown, gooey stuff that you can just pump up out of the ground, And non-conventional petroleum resources, which consist of like natural gas liquids, deep water oil, polar oil, tar sands from Canada, heavy oil from Venezuela, all of those are much more difficult and expensive to produce. And it's interesting that we're relying more and more on this non-conventional oil. In fact, ASPO figures that conventional oil production has already peaked globally, probably in 2004 or early 2005. And while ASPO projects that we'll be able to get to maybe 2010 before global all liquids production peak, most of the increase is going to come in the form of deep water oil, not in terms of the light, sweet, conventional crude that we would like to have more of. So why are they saying this? Why are they projecting a near-term peak? Well, one of the reasons is that global oil discoveries have been declining for about 40 years now. This slide is from ExxonMobil. It's not controversial information. And as you can see, it has a peaking of global oil discoveries right around 1963 or 64. So this is a long-term trend. We're not just talking about a couple of years of bad luck. Now, there's a little optimistic news on the end there. That's 1999 and 2000, discoveries primarily in Central Asia. Since 2000, we've seen a return to this declining trend, and 2003 and 2004 were the worst years for discovery since the early 1920s. You can see where we were back in those days. We discovered about 7 billion barrels of new oil last year, and we used about 31 billion barrels. So we're using about five times as much as we discover right now. Back in the 1960s, we were discovering more than we used, and since 1980, we've been using more than we discover. We've been dipping into the bank account. Another clue that we may be reaching a near-term peak is that other countries besides the U.S. are peaking and have been peaking for the last 30 years. And some really important countries, indeed whole regions like the North Sea. The North Sea is important because most of the discoveries occurred in the 1970s when we really needed some good news in that department. After the trade embargo, the oil embargo of 73, folks in importing countries like the U.S. were getting a little nervous about where their future supply would come from. So to find lots of high-quality, light, sweet crude in non-Middle Eastern countries like Great Britain, Norway, and Denmark was really good news. So we went about extracting that oil using all the latest technology, like water flooding and bottle brush drilling and everything else, with the consequence that production peaked only 30 years after discovery peaked in the North Sea. And the interesting thing is we're seeing substantial decline rates in North Sea oil, which is important because many of the petroleum optimists, the folks who say that oil production may not peak until 2020 or 2025 or maybe even 2030, put a lot of their hope in new technology, that these new extraction technologies will enable us to get more out of old oil fields and push the peak out until later. But what we're actually seeing in real terms is that, yes, the peak seems to be pushed back a little bit. We extract the oil faster, but when the peak comes, the decline rate is that much faster. So we're seeing decline rates from North Sea countries in the range of 5 to 10% a year. Now, this is really bad news for these countries. Great Britain, which witnessed an economic miracle because of North Sea oil, now is becoming an oil importing nation again. Wonder why Tony Blair is... I won't finish that thought.
We're taking a short break from this talk by Richard Heinberg, who spoke in Portland recently. He's the author of Power Down, Options for a Post-Carbon World. Here's an opportunity to go to your phone and call us here at 503-232-8818 to become a member of KABU and show your support for this kind of programming, if I can say the word. How's it going?
This is a program, not a pogrom.
Yeah, I know. It's
we have
dry in the air room.
Yes, we have some people who did go to the phones, and I want to thank Jake in Brownsville, KJ in Beaverton, and Q2 in Portland. So thank you, all of you.
And, you know, I have to say that listening to this this talk worries me. A post-carbon world, excuse me, we're carbon-based life forms. If we have a post-carbon world, we're all in trouble. So just think about that. And think about that while you call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We need more money. We need more calls. We need more enthusiasm and what's the word where you get involvement? We need involvement. We need involvement from you listeners to come and pledge and give money and get excited and be involved and call 503-232-8818.
Stop Bill now while you got a chance. It will. Don't give us a call, 232-8818, or outside the metro area, if you are in Brownsville, say, 1-877-500-5266. Or you can go online at www.kboo.fm and just click on the Join Now button. And we have special premiums on the web. So there's lots of choices, and when you do make a pledge, there's lots of ways you can pay it. You can do it with an electronic funds transfer. You can put your plastic to its highest possible use on your credit card, or you can just give us cash, or we can send you a little bill, and you can write us a check. So there's lots of ways you can do this. It's really fun. I want you to come on down and visit with us. We have a whole crew of happy people here, and we'll make you feel very welcome. And you can look through the card. There's lots of different sort of premiums that we don't even know about. You know,
there are hundreds.
You have to actually look through the card file and see them.
These are all the gifts that people give to us to give to the contributors, the people who become member owners or members, depending on your legal point of view. And that could be you. Just come down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in beautiful Eastside Portland, and you can give us money and take your time looking through the hundreds of different possible gifts that you can get from us because you have become part of the family.
Do we now come? Can you see our mural on the wall? We have this mural that we color in as we receive more money. And we hopefully in another week or so, this mural will be all covered, colored in. And this is a kind of a picture of, actually it's a picture of our bagel vault. That's where that little door is on the bottom, is the door to the bagel vault. And if you notice, the bagel vault is under a grassy knoll. And that's where we are. Just come on down and see us. You could help color it in. We have premiums. Oh, we have other people to thank. And let's see, we want to thank Robin in Lake Oswego. And we have here's one premium we have is a Peak Oil set. This is on tape or CD, and it features Richard Heinberg and James Kunstler. And this is yours for a $75 minimum pledge. So it's a $24 retail value. And I know James Kunstler is very, you know, you're hearing Richard Heinberg right now. Later on, I think at 1 p.m. this afternoon, you'll be hearing James Kunstler, who wrote the book The Long Emergency. And you will have both those talks, you know, to listen to them at your leisure without interruptions from people like Bill and I. And
Bill and me?
Yes.
Oh. Because you put like in front of it.
Oh, like.
So it's an object, not a
subject. I like you,
subject.
You like me? Is that
exactly.
How it goes?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I don't like I.
You don't
I like me.
I like, okay.
Yes.
Well, now that we got that cleared up to everybody's satisfaction, we're just kind of clearing up all kinds of things this morning, aren't we? Anyway,
yes.
But there's one thing above all is the number to call is 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We like to hear the phones ring. We like to, You know, there's one
That's
right
it.
Now.
But
yes.
We want more.
Let's hear another one. Two, three, many phones ringing all at
yes.
the same time. People going crazy down here.
Two, three, 1,000 phones will blossom or
that's,
something like
that's
that.
That's what we want to hear. Yes,
yes,
do it now. So the number to call, once again, is 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. There is another person on the line.
And don't forget that if you're listening to us streaming on the web at KBOO.FM, there's a Join Now button, and you can click on it and join right there and not have to do anything else, not have to go to the phone or anything.
Instantly. Instantly.
As it were.
Yes, you can do that. So, you know, and there's all sorts of premiums. We have this box that's just bulging with little cards that have little presents and little gifties that you can have. But you have to call the number 503-232-8818, and one of our volunteers at the phones will kind of find out what kind of stuff you're interested in, and you know whether you want a nice restaurant meal or something to read or a ticket to a performance or some kind of service like Bill mowing your lawn or something like that.
Yeah, that's going to happen soon.
that's the way you get it. Just call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266, and within a couple minutes, whatever you desire is yours.
Well, yeah, plus the about 3 to 4 weeks of waiting, because we don't send out the gifts until after the pledge break is over. So that'll be, what, another 2 weeks or so, week and a half.
Right.
And then we start sending everything out. But don't you worry, you will get it. For instance, if you contributed $60 for the Richard Heinberg tape, which is what you're listening to now, it will come to you, say, in about 4 weeks. And that's 503-232-8818. And to wrap it all up, 1-877-500-5266.
Now we'll go back to the talk by Richard Heinberg.
So here are some non-OPEC countries that are in decline. You notice there's this window of depletion from about 45% to almost 70%. When a country goes into that window, it tends to go into production plateau and then decline. And countries that are in that situation include Australia, UK, Pakistan, Argentina, Congo, New Zealand, Yemen, Tunisia, Gabon, Norway, Colombia, Egypt, Oman, Peru. And then OPEC countries that are in that situation include Indonesia, very important oil exporting country throughout the 20th century. It used to be called the Dutch East Indies. And that's where Royal Dutch Shell got its start. I could go on for some time talking about the importance of the Dutch East Indies during World War II for oil supply and so on. I won't go there, but the point is, Indonesia is so far into depletion now that it's actually importing more oil than it exports, even though it's still a member of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC. Qatar, Venezuela, Iran, Nigeria, Algeria. What's Saudi Arabia doing here, the world's foremost oil producer? Well, there's a lot of controversy about Saudi Arabia. Of course, the government of Saudi Arabia insists that they'll be able to continue increasing their rate of production for some time now. But there are a number of independent analysts, including Matthew Simmons, the author of the recent book Twilight in the Desert, who are saying that Saudi Arabia may, in fact, be right on the cusp of its peak right now. And Simmons says this on the basis of his careful study of about 230 technical papers from members of the Society of Petroleum Engineers who've worked the fields in Saudi Arabia. If that's true, if Saudi Arabia is at the point of peak, then that the game is over. The world is at peak. Now, it's not just ASPO who are saying that global oil production is getting close to its all-time maximum. The executive vice president of Ford Motor Company, Mark Fields, made a speech, very prominent speech, by the way, a few weeks ago, in which he said, almost off the cuff, as though everybody knows it, world oil production is peaking. Excuse me, thank you very much for saying that. Zhang Weiping, who is the chief economist of Chinese National Offshore Oil Corporation, which recently tried to buy the American oil company Unocal. Zhang Weiping is quoted just a few weeks ago as saying that he expects global oil production to peak at 94 to 100 million barrels per day during the next 5 years. And here's a delicious little quote at the end. He says, high oil prices will have adverse effects on China's economy. Yes, I think so. It'll have adverse effects on everybody's economy. This is a slide from the International Energy Agency, which is headquartered in Paris. The IEA was set up by the OECD countries, the wealthy countries of the world, to warn of future energy shocks. It was set up back in the 1970s. And this is a slide from a presentation back in July 2004 by one of the chief petroleum analysts for the IEA. And it's talking about oil production capacity. Now, currently, the world is producing about 84 million barrels of oil per day. That's our current total production capacity. But that's not a static number. It's a moving target. Why? Well, for one thing, demand is always increasing, principally these days from China and India and also the United States. So the IEA is saying every year we can anticipate about 1.5 million million barrels a day of new demand that has to be met. At the same time, there's about 4 million barrels a day or more of new production capacity that will be needed to offset depletion. Now, what does that mean? Well, we've already seen that many countries are in production decline. That means that reliably, Venezuela, Indonesia, Qatar, Oman, United States will produce less oil next year than they did this year. They're producing less oil this year than they did last year. Okay, so some other countries have to be producing more oil than they did the previous year just so we can stay even. And if you total that all up, it's actually a little more complicated than this. I'm simplifying a few things, but altogether, we're talking about 6 million barrels a day of new production capacity needed with each passing year just for us to stay even. And this is cumulative, so that by the end of 2010, we will have had to have found and developed something like 30 million barrels a day or more of new production capacity. That's a big job. Now, the oil industry has been doing that job for year after year, for decades. So the question is, for how long can they continue to do that? Because the treadmill is speeding up all the time. It's getting to be, as you can see, it's a tougher job with every passing year. Well, Chris Skrabowski, who's the editor of Petroleum Review in London, has an ongoing study he calls Oil Field Mega Projects, which he updates in Petroleum Review every few months. The latest update was published in October 2005. He estimates there are about 16.5 million barrels a day of new production capacity in development over the next 5 years. Well, does he have a crystal ball? How does he know this? Well, new production capacity is hard to hide, and nobody wants to hide it anyway. I mean, companies and countries that have new projects in the pipeline want to crow about them. And these projects take years to develop, and they cost millions, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars. So you can't really keep them secret anyway. So we know what's on the conveyor belt moving in our direction between now and 2010, and it adds up to about 16.5 million barrels a day, and this figure has been confirmed by other analysts. Problem is, we need, as I said earlier, over 30 million barrels a day of new production capacity by that time. Result? Between now and 2010, we're going to see problems. And Skrabowski concludes that global oil production is probably going to peak right around 2008. So again, here's still another independent analyst coming up with essentially the same forecast. This is another International Energy Agency slide from the same presentation in July 2004, and it makes some very interesting and telling statements. It says, older oil fields are mature and declining. Why is that significant? Because we get about half of our oil currently from only about 100 supergiant oil fields that were all discovered in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. The rest of the oil, the other half of the oil that we're using these days, comes from thousands of much smaller fields. Not all oil fields are created equal. And the problem is, all the big ones were discovered decades ago, and we're not finding any of those elephants anymore. We're finding, you know, mice and minnows. The new discoveries are of smaller fields, yep. The industry's therefore being forced to produce flat out. This next statement is extraordinary. Global reserves have been overstated for political reasons. What's that about? Okay, let me explain. Well, back in the early 1980s, OPEC made a rule which said that member nations could extract and export their oil in proportion to their stated reserves. Think about that for a moment. Now, OPEC countries are not rich countries with diversified economies. These are largely poor countries. Most of them have per capita income rates that are much lower than the OECD countries, right? So they're not diversified economies. They get almost all of their income from oil exports. So they're highly motivated to export as much oil as they possibly can to maximize their income. So this provided them with an incentive to overstate their reserves. Let's look at what happened. First on the scene was Kuwait, which in 1985 went from 63.9 billion barrels of stated reserves to 90 billion barrels just in 1 year, with no significant oil discoveries taking place in the country during that year. That looks a little fishy by itself. But then you look at Abu Dhabi 2 years later, went from 31 billion barrels to 92.2, again in 1 year. And the other kind of fishy thing is look what happens year after year after that. It stays at 92.2. Now, presumably they're extracting some of that oil as they go along, but it doesn't show up in the books. Iran goes from 48.8 to 92.9. And, of course, if Iran is going to 92.9, Iraq has to, well, they go from 47.1 to a nice even 100 billion barrels. Saudi Arabia disapproves of this practice, evidently, because they drag their feet. They don't want to get involved in this kind of thing, but they're losing market share. So after a couple of years, Saudi Arabia goes from 170 billion barrels to 257.5. Now, question. Is all of that oil really there? Answer, nobody knows. When we see these figures in Time magazine or New York Times or someplace like that, they're always followed by two words, proven reserves. So the average layperson is bound to conclude that there must be someone proving the existence of those reserves. That's not the case. These are national oil companies. This isn't ExxonMobil or Shell or somebody that can be audited by the Securities and Exchange Commission. These are national oil companies. There's no global oil cop with a giant dipstick who goes around and checks once a year to see how much is there.
We have to end this talk here due to time constraints, but you can have a copy of this talk by Richard Heinberg speaking on peak oil to listen to in its entirety and uninterrupted by calling KABU right now and pledging $60, a mere $60 membership. The number is 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Well, one person, Laurie in Lake Oswego, called that first number and joined the KABU family. Thank you, Laurie.
And that brings us to $185. And our goal is another $615 higher, $800.
Ooh.
So we want plenty of phone calls. I want to actually make it more attractive for you to call in and get the Richard Heinberg tape. I'm going to give you a little background about this one. Okay, now, as was noted, this is a much longer talk than we have time for today. And it is uninterrupted. Well, there was a lot of struggle about that. We were thinking, hey, how about if we put in pledge breaks on this tape?
Well, what about a tape of our pledge breaks?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So, I mean, and so
the
finally,
Phil and Pear show.
Back and forth between Pear and me and the station management, who are not, by the way, owners, they decided, no, let's just keep it with Richard Heinberg's talk. And so it's uninterrupted. You don't have to listen to me or Pear or anybody else but Richard Heinberg, or you can stop it and go to the bathroom or grab a bite to eat. This is one of the great things about getting the tape or the CD of a talk that you hear, and it's the entire thing. So give us a call at 503-232-8818 or from out of town, 1-877-500-5266. Be a happy non-owner of KBOO and have a part in what happens at the station, be able to vote, get the program guide, and it all happens if you're a non-owner. 503.
An overseer. A privileged person.
A privileged person, exactly.
Yes, right.
232-8818.
Well, there's one way to do it. Give us a call. We have people just waiting to hear from you. We have our premiums. We do have more copies of Blood and Oil by Michael Clare, who we heard earlier this morning, and who will be here in town in, I think, about 3 weeks.
And we also have the Peak Oil set, which is the Richard Heinberg talk, and one by James Kunstler that will be played later at 1 p.m. this afternoon. And those two together are a mere $75 minimum pledge, which is, by the way, just barely more than $6 a month if you choose to have it removed from your bank account monthly, which is, of course, such an easy way to do things.
That's less than you pay for the Oregonian, isn't it?
And a whole lot better value, I might add.
Yeah.
My, of course, humble opinion.
Doesn't have any funnies, but I don't know. You can read those someplace or other.
Well, you can read them while you're listening to the CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, 503-232-8818. Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266, or online at www.kboo.fm. And there you can click on the Join Now button, and there's a whole lot of special online-only thank you gifts. Like, I don't know what they might be, like your own little modem or something like that.
I have no idea.
I really should check.
As a matter of fact, why don't you keep talking and I'll check right now and try to see if.
Well, I got to keep blabbing and now Bill is trying to figure out how to operate his little laptop computer here. He has it sitting on his on the desk because there's not much of his lap showing. So. Anyway, he is researching this right now, but. You know, there's lots of reasons for joining KBOO. Just the, there's the premiums, there's the listening that you get all during the year. You know, we only do this twice a year. We don't have commercials every 3 minutes. We have this sort of little extended message to our sponsors. That's what they are. They're not owners, they're sponsors. Anyway, they are, you know, we do this twice a year because this is how we raise our money. And we think it's a lot more fun and less offensive than a constant barrage of silly commercials. And so,
They said 60 on air.
Yes.
Oh, peak,
yes.
The Peak Oil is $75 premium.
That's the set, yes.
Yes, okay.
That's what we said. We've been corrected for saying the right thing. But, you know, we're tough, we can take it.
That's right. We've been around here a while, you know.
Yes, abuse is our middle name.
Well, come on down and see us. Come on down and see Bill doing his research. He's got the KBOO membership thing on his screen there. He's scrolling down. You'll find out what's going on here. But come on down. We have a whole happy crew here in our operations room back here.
Okay, here we go.
Oh,
here are some of the things featured on the web as gifts to you. There's, of course, the wonderful KBOO versus the MediaZilla's T-shirt, the KBOO Blues T-shirt, which was, by the way, designed by our Morning News and Public Affairs Director, Kathleen Stevenson. So a multi-talented person there. There's Live on the Dharma Wheel Volume 1 and Volume 2 and Volume 3, or 1, 2, and 3 all together,
well, that's
or 1, 2, 3, and 4.
you know, that's something worth talking about right there, because, you know, Robin Shanti, she knows all these musicians, and they come down here at KABU, and they do live concerts, and they get recorded. And so we have those live concerts on tape or CD or however we do it.
Both,
and this is music that you're not going to see in the stores, because it's a one-of-a-kind deal, you know. It only happens once when they come down here to KABU.
And each of those CDs is available for $60 or more. And then if you get the set of the 1 through 3, that's $120, so that's like one for free. And, of course, they're all for free because you're getting the membership in KABU. And then you can have volumes 1 through 4 for $180. So then we have Live on KABU, Bluegrass. We have the stainless steel, lovingly plastic-lined travel mug for $60. And for new members only, this is a good one, $60 membership for new members only. You get a $15 gift certificate to Old Wives Tales Restaurant up on 13th and East Burnside. So there are a variety of things there at KBOO.FM.
Oh, all sorts of things. And that's all the more reason to turn on your computer, get online, tap in www.kboofm, and one of those premiums can be yours.
Yeah.
That is really neat.